Hey, imaginary internet audience, welcome back to another exciting Mile Wide Club. Today I am super privileged and super excited to be talking with Shel Raffin, a future librarian, a librarian of the future, a poet, an essayist, a photoshopper, in some kind of futuristic jam band, I think.
Future-y, fucky, I don't know, shitpost band is what one person called it.
Shitposting is the future. The future of music is the shitpost.
The future is Same If by Mackerel Mouse.
Yeah, it's true. The future is a furry band stomping on a Macklemore's face for all eternity. That's a complicated image, and I feel compelled to Photoshop it, but I also feel compelled not to Photoshop it. It's a complicated balance for me. Anyway, Chell is an excellent essayist, an excellent thinker, and today has guided us down the complicated world of animes that I didn't watch as a tween. And mangas, I guess, but we're not really talking about the manga. We're talking Cardcaptor Sakura. I guess thank you for being on the show, first of all, first and most importantly. Thank you for your extremely detailed and thoughtful watch list that you made. That's, I think, the most specific I've ever had a guest on the show make the content list. It was super detailed and super on point.
That's good. I mean, it's like a shoujo anime, so the pacing is so slow that if I said just watch the first 10 episodes, you would get the gist of like, well, she's a girl. There's magic. The interesting stuff happens every 15 episodes that one character appears or something, so it was efficient.
Yeah, I mean, it's by nature of it being kind of a monster of the week show, or indeed a card of the week show, it takes a while to get to the sort of big bad of the show, as it were. And there's a lot of just like slice of life along the way, I guess.
Well, it's a magical girl show, so like Sailor Moon or anything, the monster of the week is a manifestation of some kind of character thing they need to overcome, or it's designed to force them to confront it. I mean, literally, there is no real big bad ever in this show because it's always just like, well, so some magic person foresaw that this would happen, guided you along the way by creating troubles. That's like how everything is in this world, is like this guy hundreds of years ago foresaw this and he reincarnated himself so he would construct a game for you so that you could learn to recognize your feelings or something and learn to grow as an elementary school girl.
That makes it sound like it's Shoujo Saw, which is not actually a bad description.
I mean, season three especially is not that unlike that. I mean, it's literally just like this kid messing with them so that they will like have something to do.
Yeah, so that they'll overcome their personal whatever.
It's not a dangerous world at all besides what they're doing. Like if once the cards are caught, like there's nothing happening in the world, so they had to come up with something. So let's make a child troll them.
Yeah, some kind of immortal child. I think he's not. Is he actually a child? Is he not a child? I was a little unclear on what his deal is.
So Ariel is the half reincarnation of the sorcerer Clow Reed.
The half reincarnation.
Half reincarnation because it's Clamp, and so if you actually you don't need to understand the ridiculous explanations, but then when you get into them they're like absurd. So
Yeah.
when the sorcerer Clow Reed was going to die at some point, which gets really complicated and weird if you look into that part, he decided that he wasn't going to reincarnate again normally because then he would just be himself again and it would be boring, but he didn't want to like give up his magic and like memories, so he like reincarnated the non-magic part of him as Sakura's dad, and then the magic part is this like kid in England, and I think it's supposed to be framed as like he's like mixed race, and so I think it's like the English part reincarnated in England and the Asian part reincarnated in Asia. It was like
Oh,
maybe what
that.
they were going for. So
That's
Ariel is Sakura's dad, half, but the magic part that has all of his memories, like, it just is the personality of Clara Reed, but in the body of a child.
That's fraught. That's extremely fraught. There's a lot in that.
Yeah. If you look into the show, every character is related. I don't think there's any character that's not, like, someone's cousin or something.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess that's one way to build stakes automatically, but also, yeah, hikes. It just occurred to me that we went into, like, the weird details of Magic Saw without actually giving, like, a brief summary of the show. I don't know if we need to, because it's, I mean, it was very popular.
I can give a blurb. Yeah. So Sakura Kinamoto is in fourth grade, and her dad's an archaeologist, and she's spunky and athletic and cheerful, and, like, that's her personality trait. And her dad finds some book that's, like, locked and, like, valuable and rare and old, but they can't get it to be unlocked. He just, like, keeps it in his basement. And one day she, like, starts coming into her, like, magic or something, because, like, the, I don't know, it's like Harry Potter rules for magic, I think. Like, your family has magic. And she goes in her basement because she's called. She finds this book, and it unlocks for her, which it didn't do for anyone else, because she's magical. And she is in fourth grade, and she's just learning English. And she picks up this card that's inside the book. The book is, like, full of cards, and it says Windy on it. And she reads that, like, oh, it's English. I practice reading English. So she says Windy, which casts a wind spell that scatters these cards all over her, like, Tokyo suburb. And these cards are, like, magical beings that were created by an ancient sorcerer named Clara Reed, who is, like, the most powerful sorcerer because he blended East and West or something like that. And so,
wait, is that canon? I missed that in the show. Is that canon? Is that, like, their actual...
That's canon. Every single time they explain why he's so powerful, it's because he blended Eastern and Western magic styles, which is why if you look at the magic circles that appear, how they make it blending East and West is you'll see, like, Chinese characters and then, like, just English letters, like the letter E or something. So he made these cards and they were sealed away because he's dead, and then they got everywhere, and when they're free they don't have a master, so they're like wild animals. And a cute guardian comes out of the book named Cerberus, but it's Japanese, so they call him Karo-chan. And he's like, you scattered these things everywhere and they're gonna cause havoc, so you have to collect them. So she becomes a magical girl and has to become a capturer of cards and run around and basically just lives daily life. And then every so often, a card will appear out of nowhere and be like, oh, I locked you in this room with this person you have to talk to, and the room's not going to unlock until you solve this thing. Or, oh no, the stuffed animals are flying all over the place and you have to help this shopkeeper lady or something. So,
yeah.
And she has an older brother named Toya, who's very important for the stuff we're going to talk about today, who's, like, kind of an asshole to her all the time, but in, like, a way where, like, he's trying to be just teasing and affectionate, but it's not very clear if she knows that. And he has, like, a best friend, in quotes, that she has a crush on, named Yukito, who it turns out later is not human and is, like, a magical being created by Clow in order to test her when she has all the cards. But I didn't have you watch that episode because it wasn't really relevant, besides the fact that, like, he's a weird magical angel thing. Moon, he's a moon guardian, but he has, like, two personalities. Like, the one that's Yukito and the one that is, like, a weird angel thing named Yue.
Yeah, so, my understanding of it is that Yue is, like, the true character, and then Yukito is the disguise, but Yukito doesn't know he's a disguise. He just thinks he's a person, and exactly. Lives in the world as a person. Are they high schoolers or are they college kids?
It depends. Okay. So, great. In the manga, they're middle schoolers, I think, but in the anime, they're in high school.
Yeah.
So Toya and Yukito are in high school, which is adjacent to the elementary school. So they're basically always just at the same place as each other.
That is some extremely convenient city planning, by the way. They were like, well, we're going to put the middle school clear on the other side of town, but we need the high school and the elementary school just to abut each other for plot. So good job to the city planners.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because recently they made like a manga sequel where she's in middle school now, and the university is near the middle school.
Yeah, truly built just for those dudes. Nice. That's convenient. Nice work if you can get it, right? Do you think
Yeah.
their dead mom was on the city planning commission and just set that up when she knew how old her kids were?
Okay, but that's like, I would be surprised if that's how it was, because the way this world works is the explanation for everything that happens is someone who is magic had a vision and then set things up that way.
Yeah,
Like,
that's true.
absolutely everything, especially when you get into like the weird Sliders spin-off. They made Sliders, but with Sakura being the main character. Which is canonically the same universe, but only kind of, because it's an alternate universe version of her. But like Cloud Reed appears, and it's the same Cloud Reed. But anyway, once you get to that extent where they also explain some things that happen in Cardcaptor Sakura, it's like literally like there's not a single like no everyone can see the future and everyone's omniscient and they all set everything up exactly as it happens, and that's how that works. But anyway, so yeah, so she's in middle school. She has a crush on her brother's like boyfriend that she doesn't realize is his boyfriend, and there's like a mysterious transfer student from China named Xiaoran, who is also like the same age as her, and is like a direct descendant of like Clow Reed's mother's side of the family, and he's like been tasked to collect the cards as well, but he can't actually catch them, so they have to work together, and he hates her, but then they fall in love, and he's also her rival in love, as a friend, one of her friends puts it, because he also has a crush on Sakura's brother's boyfriend. And so they compete over his attention. And the last character worth introducing is Tomio, which is Sakura's best friend, who is like explicitly gay for her, but like repeatedly says in like minor scenes that like she loves Sakura so much, she's content to see Sakura happy and not need it reciprocated. Which I feel like isn't going to keep working out for her once they're in like high school. And that's going to like suck more to just be like your straight friend's third wheel. But for now, she's like pretty content. And she's like films Sakura and stuff and like is like loves to watch her do magic and ships her with every character that she likes. So that's the premise of the show pretty much. And like in the third season, as we already mentioned, a weird small child trolls them so that he can push Sakura and Chiron into realizing they love each other and not Sakura's brother's boyfriend.
Yeah, a small child that's a reincarnation of a magician has to make sure that heterosexuality finds a way, because it
Yeah.
requires magical intervention to make people straight. So
Well,
that,
the explanation of gay stuff is actually that that's what's magic.
yeah, that's true. With the exception of Sakura's bestie. All of the gay is thoroughly located in moon magic, which conveniently places it in the realm of the mystical or the thwarted.
Yes. Yeah, it's literally that scene where Sharon finally confesses to Yukito that he likes him, and then Yukito turns into Yue, the angel, and says, "No, you don't. You're just attracted to the magic being reflected off the moon magic being reflected off of me of your ancestors."
Yeah,
And
you're just
but
gay for your granddad. You're not gay for me. Excuse me, you're gay for
yeah.
the moon, who is your granddad. You're not. That is why you initially suggested, and I assume why you're still interested in part in talking about this show, is not just that like there's weird fatalism, but because it is in the fine tradition of shoujo comics that are kind of weird about being gay. And I think the two sort of sites for that are in the romantic friendship that, like, my reading, right, is that everyone except for Sakura is supposed to know that that it's her brother's boyfriend. But I guess that doesn't become super explicit until later in the show. Like in the first couple episodes, they're plausibly friends rather than like mega gay.
Yeah, but then at certain points, like pretty, especially in the third season, when they have that entire ongoing saga of Toya trying to tell Yukito that he's secretly like a weird magic being, but that's clearly like framed as him trying to confess that he like loves him. So they introduce this like girl character that interrupts him all the time. He's like, I'm going to steal him before he confesses his love. And that's like, it gets pretty more explicitly gay in that season, where like there's a lot of scenes of them feeding each other food and like they're always touching each other and they're always having sleepovers.
Yeah, I think the confession bit is super interesting because, of course, in the genre, the moment of confession is super loaded and super, like, recognizable. There's a lot of sort of framing, visually especially, but around, like, how the confession is done. And all of that framing that goes into a romantic confession is, like, exactly what happens when Toya is trying to tell Yukito that he's, like, the moon.
Yeah, and then that gets really interesting, because then once he tells them, they have this same sort of struggle of, like, being dehumanized for, like, their gayness, because there's that scene where, now that they know, they're sort of, they have to work out, like, he's reconciling that he's not human. And Toya has this scene where he says, like, you know, I don't really care if you're human or not. I just want, like, you, and I want you to keep being my friend. Being with me. And that's, like, a very interesting scene relating to, like, how gayness is this, like, mystical non-human thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how a lot of, like, yeah, like, gay youth are, like, you know, usually the representation are, like, non-humans in media.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of sort of other pieces of media that I wanted to drag in very quickly and then sort of dismiss so we didn't get too far off track, but Utena and Sailor Moon both have alien gays as well that are sort of notable for it, because Anthe in Utena is a scabbard, I guess. Also someone who has, like, a human way that she goes around in the world being sort of petty and cranky and, like, a good housewife, but also, like, she has moments where she's really petty. it's true, and it's charming. It's a little bit, Gertrude Stein, Alice B. Toklas that they have going on there, where, like, Udna's pals with everybody, and Anthe's like, I'll make the decisions around here. But I never got far enough into that past the sort of end of the comics, I guess, into the Black Rose Saga or whatever, where they actually explain what her deal is. I don't really get what her deal is, but I know she's mystical, which I think allows them to sort of displace queerness. There's also the argument that it becomes a metaphor for queerness, that in fact it's a way of sort of installing and reading something in queerness through that, but I think it's just as tidy to say that it displaces queer experiences as it is to say that it sort of becomes a metaphor for them. Although, of course, both are possible, and you can do both readings and benefit from both or whatever.
Well, Anthe's whole arc in that show is that she's kind of resigned to this role she's been put in, like, oh, she's this, like, whatever magic being, that's her job, and she has to be with whoever, like, wins her or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the arc of the show, because it gets really weird and, like, meta-textual, is, like the happy ending is that she, like, takes her glasses off and then leaves the school and, like, metaphorically or something, leaves the narrative and becomes, like, her own person and is, like, taking control of her life. Mm-hmm. And sort of becoming human and leaving that role. So that's sort of another element of, like, and she ends up, like, married to Utena pretty much. There's, like, a picture of them together. So that seems to also be about, like, her gayness to her at first is, like, resigning her to an ill fate, and she has to come to cope with that. But that's another text. That's another piece.
Yeah. The sort of reason I just wanted to, like, tag it in very briefly is to point out that the simultaneous sort of textual assertion of queerness as alien and queerness as sort of a staging ground for negotiations around humanity, or possibly vice versa, where, you know, the inhuman becomes a staging ground for queerness, but a, like, deferrable queerness, is something that exists in texts for this same age group elsewhere. So
and the same genre.
Yes. In a way that, like, means something different in Japan. That I'm not a manga studies scholar, but I read a little bit back in college about, like, ways that Japanese queer communities have responded to queerness in text, in Japanese texts like this, and, like, the sort of complicated negotiation around representation that's going on there, that, like, we know some of, because some of it is sort of the same anywhere, viz arguing about cis straight ladies doing, like, weird queer shipping as, like, a commodification thing.
Yep.
So that's
also
kind of
the same as, like, Amazon gay erotica novels about werewolves.
These are the same everywhere.
Clamp is, like, such a classic example of this, because in all of their works they have some sort of gay character or gay subtext, and it's never explicit, but, like, when you see the official art, they're basically making out all the time, like, depending on the character's age. And Clamp's whole thing that they love to do in every single show is this, like, love conquers all narrative, where you almost get the sense from Clamp works that they don't really think gay people are real, or they've never heard of it, and that they really just think of, like, this as, like, a true love, like, the soul of the person I was destined to be with happened to be born in, like, this gendered person, and that we're, like, their love is so strong, we're overcoming that. And that's sort of the narrative they have. And definitely, like, you know, they've drawn art of, like, pretty much Tomio and Sakura, like, on dates and stuff, and, like, almost kissing, even though they're, like, in elementary school, because Clamp is weird about age. And,
that is,
like,
an understatement. That is a kind of understatement.
Yeah, Clamp
of what
is
Clamp's
really age.
Deal
in the manga, they have a canonical teacher elementary school student relationship. It's very uncomfortable, and they kind of consider that to be the same thing as, like, people being gay. So Clamp is a very interesting source of gayness.
Yeah, because Clamp's most notable, like, well, that's some content that you fuckers did, is, like, Chobits.
Right.
Which is, like, based, I mean, the character is, like, a robot with the brain of a four-year-old, but, like, framed as sexy, I guess. So, and, like, has to learn to love. So, like, learning to love, but it's, like, fucked up power dynamics is extremely Clamp.
Yeah. There is this interesting thing in Cardcaptor Sakura where the gay love between, like, two men is this kind of, like, it's true and it needs to happen. But, like, all of the sort of gay women in Cardcaptor Sakura, it's sort of a, like, they need to learn to be content and not do anything about it. Like, Tomio very much is like, oh, you know, I'm not going to do anything about it. And there's also an arc with, like, her mother was Sakura's mother's cousin who had a crush on Sakura's mother. I guess that's also an incest thing, but, like, everyone is related in the show, but they framed that as well as, like, oh, well, she was gay for this woman, but she had to learn to, like, let go of that. And there's also this teacher that comes up sort of towards the end of the first season that when she shows up, Sakura's, like, blushing, and she's like, oh my god, she's so beautiful, and all this stuff, and Tomio and her, like, wow, we both love this, like, teacher, she's so hot. Or, you know, beautiful, I don't know, I shouldn't say hot, they're children, but it's this thing of, like, Sakura, and, like, everyone has to, like, learn to not see her that way, and that teacher also has an arc where apparently she used to be dating Toya or something. It's really weird.
That's
stuff.
Wildly inappropriate.
There's three teacher-student relationships in Cardcaptor Sakura. Sakura's mother was a student of Sakura's dad. Sakura's brother was dating her, like, math teacher at one point. And also there's that classmate of hers that, fortunately in the anime, they cut out the actual relationship. But, like, there's, like, a romance between her and, like, their homeroom teacher.
Jesus.
So
that is
someone
three too many.
Has a fetish.
God, yeah.
I do want to talk more about Toya.
Yeah.
Because I think that talking about gender connected to queerness is, like, how, you know, queerness is usually not seen as, like, gender appropriate, which is, like, a lot of why it's stigmatized to have these same gender relationships, is because it's, like, oh, men it's not masculine, etc. Mm-hmm. And Toya's whole arc over the entire show is about sort of not being outwardly expressive about how he feels about people in his life. It's just this very like masculine caretaker sort of thing where it's like he cares but he can't say it. Mm-hmm. And the most interesting, you know, besides how the fact that the only way to save Yukito's life is to confess to him how he feels for him, which he hadn't done before. And that's like the only way to save this person is he has to actually tell them how he feels.
Yeah.
But also with the mirror card, which is I made a point of sending you every single episode that has the mirror card in it.
Uh-huh.
Because every time Sakura has to go out and she doesn't want Toya to realize that she's on a magical adventure, even though he like knows, she uses the mirror card to like summon a clone of herself to take her place. But Toya has like the ability to see ghosts or something. So he like immediately knows it's not her and just will like hang out with this card and be like, oh, like you're my sister's like out. I'm concerned for her. And is able to be like a lot more open with his like feelings and like caring for his sister when he's talking to this like fake version of her that's like not her. You know, he's a lot nicer to the mirror card than he is to Sakura.
Yeah, the mirror card,
I think, is really interesting.
The mirror card's first appearance is a really strong example of that, where it's impersonating Sakura initially without her consent, and it like causes her all kinds of havoc around town and in her personal relationships. And it tries to lead Toya to his death off a cliff. And he recognizes that it's not Sakura, but like goes along with it to a point. And at that point is like, well, listen, I'm here to help you with whatever your fucking problem is. Just stop wearing my sister's face because that feels bad and I don't want to think she's a ghost.
Yeah, right. Because there's the implication is that that cliff is like somewhere that people jump off of regularly. And so there's ghosts everywhere. And since he can see ghosts, he's like used to interacting with ghosts in that area.
Yeah.
And so he just thinks this is like another ghost.
The other episode is, I guess, the one where Sakura gets sick.
Right.
And Toya does adopt a more explicitly caretaking attitude while she's sick, but she, for various reasons, can't let him because she has to go capture whatever card it is that time. So she sticks the mirror card in. So he just explicitly does the caretaking to the mirror card. And he's like, I know you're not actually her, but like, here's your drugs or whatever.
I think he says, like, you shouldn't take this medicine because you're not actually sick, but, like, here's the soup anyway.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we see the mirror card sort of respond to that kindness. And that's why she's able to initially capture it, is it's, like, won over by Toya's caretaking. If it's not actually, like, built from ghosts or whatever, because I don't know how building cloak cards works, it certainly responds in a similar way to a ghost being appeased by kindness. it's a space where Toya gets to do that caretaking. And because the other people in her household, I mean, her dad does the cooking for them, and they... Like, there's an explicit bit of, like, Sakura can't cook at all, but her dad and brother are really good at it and, like, wear aprons to do cute housekeeping things.
Pink aprons. Always pink aprons.
Always pink aprons. And some of that's show design, but the show design contributes to a world where these men are already, like, a little off-center from masculinity.
And then the third mirror card episode is where he goes shopping with her for Christmas. Because he's supposed to go shopping with Sakura to get, like, a gift for their dad.
Mm-hmm.
But she has to go, as usual. So she is like, I'll just have the mirror card go shopping with him. Which is, like, sort of kind of pushing the extent to which you can have a fake version of yourself doing something. Like, making a decision about what your dad would like is kind of difficult for, like, someone else to do. And at this point, like, the mirror card and Toya are like, they're just like buds now. The mirror card makes absolutely no attempt to even convince him. He's just like, hi, it's me again.
What up?
That episode ends with him sort of giving her this whole speech about like how much he appreciates that like her and all the other cards are like protecting his sister. And so he gives her like a ribbon to put her in her hair. And as like a Christmas gift for this card.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wearing it at the end of the episode. And in the card illustration, the drawing on the card changes that she's wearing this hair ribbon. And now she's smiling. and sort of that's just interesting to me that, like, I don't think he even gives Sakura a Christmas gift canonically, at least not on screen.
Yeah, so it's maybe another case where a space that is not reality is made for him to do these sort of negotiations of alternate positions on masculinity. Because he's gay for his moon boyfriend, and he's, like, harsh with his sister, but a caretaker for his mirror universe sister.
Yeah, and he does do a lot of caretaking for her in a, like, way that is not, like, there's a lot of, like, he works a lot of part-time jobs,
mm-hmm.
which is clearly connected to, like, helping pay the family through,
yeah.
because I'm guessing her dad is, like, an adjunct or something, is not getting paid enough, and he does a lot of the, this is, like, a very common idea in a lot of Asian countries of, like, expressing love and caring through, like, working and not through actual, like, direct communication. So, like, he does make her food, like, in dinner, and, like, he tells her not to get in trouble, but he doesn't do it in a nice way. He'll say, like, hey, don't do reckless things, rather than saying, like, I'm worried about you. And there's even a recurring theme in, like, especially the third season where people are saying to Sakura, like, I'm pretty sure Toya knows that you're magical. I think he knows everything. I think he knows, like, exactly what's going on, and you don't need to keep a secret because he knows. And Sakura, like, is in so disbelief that he could possibly know because, it, like, this is what she says. If he knew, he would be making fun of her for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because he's not making fun of her and, like, because he's not being mean about it, he clearly just doesn't know because it's so unclear to her that he, like, actually cares because children don't really know how to distinguish sarcasm that well. You know, he calls her, like, a little monster all the time and, like, tussles her hair, and I'm pretty clear that he thinks that that's, like, cute and, like, affectionate, but, like, she does not see it that way.
Yeah. When I said caretaking, that was definitely a misstep because you absolutely are correct in identifying all of the caretaking work he does. The distinction is, I guess, in the, like, expression of tenderness.
And
his jobs are sort of neat because there's the aquarium one where he notably, Yukito takes Sakura on a, like, she builds it up as a date to the aquarium, but they're actually going to see her brother.
Yeah.
Which is, first of all, terrible thing to do on a date with your human boyfriend, to be like, hey, I came to see you and I brought your kid sister. Like, not romantic, in my opinion. Maybe that's just me, but...
There is a movie, well, there's two movies, but the second one is not important. The first movie... Sakura, it's not a very good movie, but there is the beginning's cute, where Sakura wins, like, a raffle and wins, like, a vacation to Hong Kong, and
mm-hmm.
her dad can't go because he has, like, an archaeology something, and so she goes with Toya, and he brings Yukito, of course, because, like, oh, like, I need to accompany you, and I'm going to bring my boyfriend to Hong Kong as, like, a vacation, and they're, like, being the chaperones, and she brings Tomio because, of course, and there's a lot of scenes where it's just sort of, like, Yukito and Toya, like, having a good time watching his cute sister get excited about things, and it's kind of clear that, like, Yukito likes to humor her because it's just, like, she's cute, and this is, like, a way of connecting to, like, his human boyfriend is, like, oh, yeah, and your sister's cute, and I want to, like, hang out with you while we babysit her because that would be fun for me.
Yeah.
And then Toya kind of is maybe, I don't really know how he feels, but that's hard to tell.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell how he feels about many things besides his gay moon boyfriend. But it is sort of a replacement family that they get to build, or a imitation of being in a traditional family with, like, the two of them operating as sort of pseudo-parents to Sakura and her idiot friends.
There's even a moment where like Yukito's like dying because Sakura's magic isn't powerful enough to sustain like a living being because she's like 8, and
a problem for many 8-year-olds.
Gives up his magic to become like the new, or like, so I'm not sure if he's like the new source of magical life for Yukito, or if he's just like a supplementary. And he's told, like, if you do this, you can't see ghosts anymore, which means you can't, like, continuously talk to your dead mother. Like, you're having to give up this, like, loved one who is deceased in order to, like, save, like, this alive loved one, which is interesting, especially in terms of, like, parenting and family, where, like, Toya often, I think, stands in for Sakura's mother, sort of almost as a direct proxy, because he will talk to her mother, who is dead, and then, like, relay her wishes to Sakura. Like, not directly, it's like, your mom wants this, so much as, like, doing things on her behalf because she can't do them.
Yeah.
There's, like, several scenes where, like, he does something and then you see her mother and she's like, oh, I was here the whole time watching.
Yeah, he gets to be sort of the medium for mom. The mom-dium. The meaty mom. There we go. Nope, that's worse.
What have you said, the meaty mum?
There we go. Yeah, make it British. Good. You fixed it. We got there in the end. Yeah, so, that's, I think, maybe interesting to like, wrap it back real quick to the notion you brought of pure love and, like, love that just happens to be in the same gender. What love is more pure, theoretically, than, like, being a mom? In, like, the discourse of of available loves. So putting both Yukito and Toya in, like, maternal positions towards Sakura, I think reinforces the ways that they're sort of love for each other and their default mode of love is, like, purer. And that itself fits into not the weird mother bit, that may be a little bit too hashtag Freud, but the notion of queer love as necessarily having to evolve from purity, necessarily having to come from, like, my love for this person is so strong that their gender is irrelevant as, like, the acceptable place for queerness. Is totes a thing in, like, S-love relationships in comics. And, like, there's a whole stack of mangas dating back probably about to Heart of Thomas and the group. But the notion of, like, those pure true love relationships that evolve and are located in same-gender schools particularly, and the sort of true love and pure love articulation of those, that sort of usually limits them to childhood. So if there's something that's, or, like, the liminal space of adolescence, or, like, even pre-adolescence into adolescence.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing in Clamp Works. In one of the vaguely connected series to Kagebe Sakura called Holic, there's, like, two male protagonists that are pretty, like, subtextually gay for each other and all the art and everything. But then when it ends, one of them gets married to, like, one of the female characters. But that at that point, they're, like, 30. So it's, like, they kind of grow out of it.
Yeah. It's a space in, like, one's life where queerness is an appropriate vehicle for love or an appropriate expression of love that, per your examples with Sakura and Sakura's mom and Sakura's mom's cousin and that teacher and, like, that tangled web of asexual lesbianism.
Yeah, it's just love in the, like, undefined kind of, like, very strong affection and caring, or, like, wanting them to be good and happy but without any actual, like, desire component.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Somio might even be happy to, like, never see Sakura again so long as she knew that she was happy, because that's, like, how pure the love is framed as, because then that doesn't require her to actually do anything gay at all. She just like has to keep it to herself.
I think her creepy filming of Sakura is pretty gay, to be honest.
Yes, oh, that's true. She's filming her all the time and watching her in the AV room and all that, so that's pretty gay.
Not, yeah, not to equate the surveillance state and gayness, but, like, she's surveilling her in a very gay way.
Yeah, and she's dressing her up in all these cute outfits that she designs, so
mm-hmm.
That's definitely something. And there's, I don't know if you saw this episode, there's a episode where she visits Tomio's house, and Tomio lives in this like mansion, and she has this box that just won't open anymore. And she's like, this has like my most prized possession in it. I can't get it to open. It makes me sad. And Sakura, it's a cloud card, the lock card, getting it locked. Sakura opens it, and her most prized possession is an eraser that Sakura had lent her the day they first met. So the very first time they ever met, Tomio was like struck by love instantly and never even used the eraser. She put it in this like locked box for safekeeping. And like from that point forward was like in love. Like there was no process of developing. Mm-hmm. It was just like a predestined, like you are destined to love this person. And it is like a pure strong thing that doesn't need to be reciprocated. I mean, it's a little bit Western. There's like a Born This Way narrative kind of tying into it of like, it's okay that these are gay feelings because it's like not, you can't help it. Like, oh, this mm-hmm. is such a strong love that like you, they have to love this person because it's like, that was what destiny chose for them. And so it couldn't be like an identity or a like general thing. Like it can't be that they would generally like Tomio would generally like women. It has to be that she was struck by a powerful feeling that can't go away. And that's why it's sort of okay to feel that way, because it's not a choice. This is like how you're born to be.
It sort of obviates the threat model of like, what if she likes other girls? Cause it sort of contains, her queer future, as it were, to only, unreciprocatedly loving Sakura.
And that also kind of happens with Shaoran, where the only way for him to change who he likes to being Sakura is for not him to just like lose interest in Yukito and gain interest in her, but rather the love crush he had on Yukito had to be fake. Mm-hmm. And that's not the person you like. And it's framed as someday you'll discover which person is the person that you love. There's no like, you'll find someone that you'll get along with. It's like, it has to be destiny. And that's also how Yukito lets down Sakura when she kind of realizes, like, oh my god, you're my brother's boyfriend. Why didn't I see this before? He says, don't worry, like, you'll figure out eventually which person is the one that you love. It's not that you would fall in love with someone. They already exist. It's your soulmate. And it's not me. It was fake for me because actually I just reminded you of your dad, which is like, I guess the way that Yukito always turns people down is to tell them that he's connected to their family somehow. I guess I should try that on OkCupid sometimes. Someone like says like, hey, you're hot. And I'll say like, that's just because I remind you of your sister.
Yeah, you should absolutely, like, just if someone likes you on Tinder or whatever, just be like, nah, buddy.
It's the moon.
It's the moon. I'm the moon. you're just lusting after the moon.
I'm reflecting your ancestral power at you, and that's why you're flustered. But it's not love. It's not attraction.
We really provided a public service on this podcast, I think. If any y'all out there in listener land are trying to turn someone down, just be like, no, I'm a reflection of your ancestral powers. I mean, I think the sort of, there's not a lot of heterosexuality besides the teacher, student, and then Shaoran and Sakura, and I guess Sakura's mom is dead, so that's not really heterosexuality anymore, because heterosexuality ends at death.
And it's not portrayed. Like, we know that this is a mom and this is a dad, but I don't think we ever even see them really interacting much, like, even in flashbacks. I think for the most part, we don't really see them being straight together. They just are parents.
Yeah,
like, that is their role. It's like, your parents don't have sex. That's not a thing they do.
It's a fact. Science fact.
So that doesn't really count either. There is also another really good way of turning someone down that was an episode that I didn't send you, because it was an episode where Sakura is sent back in time as like an apparition to watch a scene where Toya gets turned down by her math teacher.
What?
Back when they were together.
That's where useful. He's like,
oh, so the way she turns him down, so he's like, oh my god, I like you so much. And, you know, remember, her math teacher is like magic and she can see the future. And the way that she says it is, I can see the future and this is my fortune telling, is that you will find love of someone else, but we will be good friends.
Oh my God, yes,
I
that's
have
it
to
for
go to
now.
England, and when I come back, you will love another and we will be good friends.
That's way better than like, let's just be friends, or I only see you as a friend, being like, nah, I can see the future, and in the future we're friends. I think that's much more efficient.
Yeah, and that's another case of like totally as true love as Igita. We couldn't like this person. She can't just say it's because I'm like a teacher.
Oh crap. I actually had a thought and then it was gone in the magic of fortune telling. Oh, right. Sharon and Sakura do not seem particularly predestined.
They do develop more than any other character. Like you
Their
can see them get closer.
relationship rather than being I mean, presumably it's foretold because fucking everything is foretold. But it's not, a bolt from the blue. It's like a different kind of temporality than like your love is foretold and can exist only as pure unrequited or pure eternal, like transdimensional love. Because I think Yukito and Toya, I read that they show up in other series.
Yeah, that's in the Sliders spinoff where Sharon and Sakura travel through different dimensions and solve problems. But they're not really Sakura or Sharon. They do a really weird narrative thing where you're watching, like, yeah, it's a show about Sakura and Sharon, and like Toya is the king of a desert kingdom, and Yukito and Toya are in love in like every single universe they visit. But then, like, Sakura does not act anything like Sakura, and Sharon doesn't like act anything like Sharon. And then it actually turns out that they are clones and they're not the real ones. And then the real ones are introduced and they actually act like the ones from Hard Rock to Sakura, which is a very strange
What?
narrative choice. But
Wait,
anyway,
like
yeah,
actual
they're
clones or like magic
anytime.
clones? Like science clones or like wizard clone?
Wizard clones.
Okay. I mean, I was really hoping for some like card captor like test tube babies, but okay, fair enough, wizard clones.
Yeah, oh no, that show is like impossible to even describe the chronology of it. But anyway, yeah, so they are transdimensional. Like they're always in love in every universe, and that's how it is with like every character that ever exists in Clamp. If there are two characters that are in love, they're always in love. Like when Tomio appears in that show, she always like immediately sees Sakura and is like, I know that you're like the best, and they like immediately become friends because it's like a soul bonding thing. I don't know. But so Sharon and Sakura are sort of the only relationship that's really developed slowly, and isn't just this like immediate thing. And it's actually really convincing. Like I'm normally not very into when like shows have a straight love interest, but like they take 70 episodes to develop it, and it's very slow and they take their time. It's very convincing that they actually would come to like each other. And there's a lot of episodes of Tomio being like, Sakura is completely oblivious, and like, you have to tell her that you like her. And then they do this interesting thing where at the end, Sakura doesn't realize she likes Sharon until he's like going away. He's like flying back to Hong Kong, and she has to think about it very hard. And they still frame that as like, you're gonna find out that he's the person you liked all along, but the actual development of getting to that point, you can see how at the beginning they kind of hate each other, and then like, they, as they work together, become nicer to each other, and then they start being affectionate towards each other. And there's an episode where Sharon's like arranged marriage fiance like gives her blessing to Sakura with this like letter that's like, you better make him happy, because I still love him and I always will. Because she, and then she like bonds with Tomio as like they both have like an unrequited love, and it's kind of framed as this like, you are doomed now. You will never be reciprocated because you love this person so much.
Gay spinster, yeah.
Fall in love when you're 8 years old, and that's it. You're set. You can never change. That's how it works.
That would be real bad. We'd all be doomed, I think.
Yeah, it'd be really bad.
So thank God we don't live in magical predetermined universes.
The population growth must be really low in Clamp World because, like, half of people in the world like just end up like alone because they love someone unrequited and that's it, they're doomed. So
Oh, hold
like
on.
very few relationships must end up like producing children.
We forgot about how if you're a doomed lesbian, you can also settle for a man. Like you can
Oh.
also learn an appropriate venue for your if not romantic attachment, familial attachment.
Does this happen in Cardcaptor Sakura?
You said that her her mom's cousin has to learn not to be gay anymore.
Right. Well, yeah, because she does eventually have a child. So she must have found, like, a husband.
Or, you know, whatever.
Or, like, someone. She somehow had a child.
Yeah. Produced something from somewhere.
A child who was destined to love the child of who her mother actually loved.
That's some Twilight shit, to be honest. That's some, like, Renesmee and Werewolf Boy, like, intergenerational fuckery. And I'm not for it. But...
Well, there's this whole thing where, like, it's framed as, like, a, like, her true gay love thing, but, like, it easily could not be, because that whole plot is about the fact that she disapproved of her cousin dating her professor, which is a pretty reasonable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's framed as her needing to let go and let her, like, be happy, because that's her true love, and, like, come to accept that, like, true love crosses boundaries, even though, like, her whole family is kind of, like, disapproving of, like, this member of their family dating her professor, who's, like, twice her age. And because of that, there's, like, this a lot of episodes where Sakura, like, meets her grandfather on her mother's side and doesn't know that it's her grandfather, because, like, that entire family is completely out of touch with her because they disapprove of her father having married a student. And so that's, like, a whole other running arc that is, like, a whole other topic. But that is connected to, like, the cousin who she has to realize that her disapproval is actually just because she's gay, and then become content with that and then find a husband, which is a very interesting arc to have.
Yeah. It is funny that the romance that's, like, actually has social obstacles put up around it is the Hets.
No one ever disapproves of Toya and Yukito. They all just kind of know and they accept it. It's also clear that no one ever is weirded out by Tomio liking Sakura. And when Sakura, like, expresses having, like, a crush on, like, the woman teacher, I mean, like, she's beautiful and, like, all that. And someone even says you should get a romance fortune from this shrine if you like her. This is awkward. Like, that's also kind of portrayed as, like, that's fine. That's, like, everyone's okay with that. No one is, like, weirded out by gay stuff in this world. It's just that it's also not something that, like, is normal. Whereas the Hets always face the obstacles of, like, being from different countries, or usually an age gap, or being related. Sakura is also kind of related to Sharon, but more distantly, because she's, like, the direct descendant of Clara Reed. Like, he had a kid with someone, I guess. The implication is that he just got around and had, like, a lot of kids with a random woman around the world, and that she's, like, a descendant of one of those. Because the movie is all about, like, one of those women, like, having a grudge on him and, like, taking it out on Sakura.
Like, one of the women he got around with, or one of his other descendants? I'm just curious how old this lady is.
It's, like, the ghost of one of the women he got around with.
Okay, like, so not a very old lady.
Like, Hong Kong, and then he, like, disappeared. But he, like, was, like, a jerk and was like, oh, but I'll be back. And then, of course, he wasn't. And so she's, like, pissed. And so when, like, Sakura shows up in Hong Kong, she's like, oh, my God, like, you're his kid. I hate you. That movie actually sucks, though. The pacing is terrible. It could have been compressed, like, 15 minutes. Don't watch it.
Yeah, you know, honestly, as much as I enjoyed taking a tour through the world of Cardcaptor Sakura, I don't think it's something that I'm likely to revisit.
I mean, I don't be seeing it because it's important to me, but, like, unless you're really wanting to go through 70 episodes in sequence, because there's not really a lot of filler, it's, like, you know, not something that's easy to just rewatch when you have, like, the time, because it's so slow-paced. You know, growing up, I loved this show. I own all the DVD box sets. I rewatched it a lot, like the whole 70 episodes. I wouldn't do, like, in sequence, but, like, you know, every couple years, I would, like, just go through the whole thing again. And I think that a lot of what makes magical girl shows really appealing to, like, trans women as kids is that these are, like, cute shows that have, like, really interesting plots where, like, someone has to transform to save the day. And, like, inevitably, it usually involves, like, something to do with, like, you save the day because you get more in touch with your emotions, or because you develop, and not just because you power up. You know, if you power up, it's directly proportional to, like, your ability to open up and be tender. And, like, also, like, you know, Sakura is this, like, athletic girl that's, like, and then she becomes more feminine in order to gain power, that like femininity can be power in a magical girl show.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is very like everything that's considered feminine is what makes someone more powerful. And so you could get that from a lens of these shows being about teaching cis young girls that they should stick in their gender norms and that is their power. Maybe, I guess, if you want to do like a second wave reading,
yeah.
But from like a trans perspective, it's like, magical girls are trans basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sort of resonates, and also just because it's like, you know, you're shamed out of watching shows that are for girls. Mm-hmm. We can kind of get away from it when like they're fighting monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, it's cool action scenes, especially because Cardcaptors, the dub, is like an infamously terrible dub because they wanted to market it to boys, so they cut out most of the episodes so they could try and make Shaoran the main character.
What? Okay.
All yeah, right. The first episode of the dub is episode 8. They cut out the first 7 episodes.
What?
And every episode gets cut down to, like, 15 minutes or something, and it's, like, I think they got all 70 episodes compressed into 26 episodes or something like that. They really, it's, like, an infamously terrible dub, and they pronounce all the names really weirdly, and they change some names but not other names, so, like, I think Tomio is, like, Madeline, but then Sakura is Sakura, so it's bad. And so, but like because of that, like saying like, oh well, I watched the vastly superior Japanese original version of this show that like boys could ostensibly get away with liking, like it's like a safe way to like enjoy something that's like feminine as a kid when mm-hmm. like you've been assigned male at birth, and like Sailor Moon is like you can't watch Sailor Moon, it's not allowed, but like you can watch Cardcaptors. So that's kind of my, like, personal history with it. It's very comforting. There's a lot of good messages about, like, everything's going to turn out okay in the end if you just push through. And the characters are really well developed. And it's just really sweet and cute. And everyone's really happy. And everyone is talented at everything all the time. Everyone's... Oh, this is a really quick thing I want to point out. It's really funny. It's not very deep. But
uh-huh.
being good at basketball is a metaphor for being gay in this show.
I was
because
thinking.
Toya is really good at basketball. Yukito is really good at basketball. And this episode, I don't know if I sent you this one in season 3, where they, when that new transfer student girl comes in, whose like uh-huh. job is to cockblock Toya and Yukito.
Yeah.
Her in the first scene, the way that they foreshadow that she's also magical and gay is that she's really good at basketball.
I remember watching those and being like, is the basketball team really shitty, or, you know, is this moon basketball powers? So
I think the idea is that, like, when you're magic, it just makes you really good at everything, but being magic also is being gay. Yeah, so being good at basketball is how you know someone's gay / not human. So that was a good comment I wanted to bring.
That yeah, might be so. Our third way to reject people for this show, being like, sorry, it's not you, it's me, I'm really good at basketball.
Yeah, and I think now that I've brought the basketball, that gets everything on my list of like stuff I want to bring up.
Perfect. I think that might be where we wrap it up then, if that's okay with you.
That sounds good.
Awesome. Well, this has been super, super great. It was super fun to watch the show because my kid's sibling collected the manga when we were like tweens or whatever, but we were like the kind of siblings where even though we shared a room, we were like, don't touch my stuff, don't do it.
Right.
So I didn't read it. I just kind of looked at their collection and was like, what's this shit? So yeah, it was,
I know.
Yeah, it was super great. Thank you so much for, first of all, for being on the show and for being such a great guest. And secondly, for giving me an excuse to delve into other people's childhoods.
That's good. I mean, that's always really enjoyable, I think, to like see how, what else you could have been consuming.
Yeah, figuring out other people's formative shit. Like, there's a real delight in going back into my formative shit, but then seeing other people's like formative tween content is such a trip too. So thank you so much. Do you want to let the people know where they can find more of you?
Yeah, so my website, I have a website.
Hell yeah.
Is datapup.info, so datapup.info. Got to get that sweet, good TLD cheap website names. and you can find everything, where to find me there, and, like, all my projects. And then my Twitter is @datapup. with an underscore at the end because you can't get a good username on Twitter these days. And I think that's the main stuff people will be interested in hearing. So that's it. That's all there is. That's all places to find me.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you, imaginary internet audience, as always, for listening. You can find Mylight Club at mylightclub.tumblr.com or mylightclub.podomatic.com or now on iTunes. And you can find my cat's Instagram at MazeTCat with two T's. Okay, thanks. Bye.